TFM.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to park this baby at your doorstep while we record today.
Again? Like, yeah. Chris, every week, come on. I've got things to do, you know, and, you know, it's frustrating because, you know, you beam this baby to my doorstep and it's evening here and I'm getting, you know, close to going to bed and I know it's day there for you and I'm losing too much sleep. Ugh.
Just got to do what you got to do, Matthew. All right, everyone. Yeah, we're going to talk about the 17th episode of Season 1 of Deep Space Nine today as we continue our 30th anniversary rewatch. This is The Forsaken. And here is a quick rundown. When the Ambassadors of Arrogance visit the station for a fact-finding mission, the crew's hospitality is put to the test. But no one faces a bigger challenge than Odo, who finds himself being pursued by Lwaxana Troi. The situation becomes more uncomfortable when data downloaded from an unknown probe infects the station's systems and triggers a series of failures, leaving Odo and Lwaxana trapped together in a turbolift. Forced to open up to one another, both reveal truths about themselves that they keep hidden from others. So that's the basic core of the story, Matthew. Of course, there's other stuff that goes on, which we'll talk about. And I just want to say at the beginning, right up front here, downloading data from an unknown probe that just came through the wormhole, probably not the best idea.
You know, it is funny that you mentioned that because it is something that immediately came to mind. I was watching this episode. I'm like, you don't really know anything about this right. probe and you haven't. I mean, you didn't set up a firewall system to put this data into so that you don't end up with, you know, you just downloaded some alien virus yeah. that you could never get rid of in time because you literally. And I do mean that literally, have no clue what right. this is. So, yes, I will say that I think if there's anything in the episode that represents utter and complete stupidity, it is actually this because it just makes no sense. I mean, how many times has Starfleet run into these type of things before, right? Where you right. you've got a probe. I mean, just think about the probe that they come across in Inner Light, right? They don't know anything about it, yeah. and all of a sudden it beams itself into Picard's head and has him
but
live
at least
an entire
they couldn't
lifetime.
Control that. Like, it did that itself. Here yeah. they actually have control. And Sisko says, no, there's no way we can bring this aboard the station. We can't bring the object in here. We don't know anything about it. Why don't we exactly. just download all of its data directly into our computer system?
I mean, I'm not really sure what the difference is, honestly. Like, there,
I think
you know,
bringing it aboard would have been
safer.
You traded
one bad situation for a worse part of the situation. And
exactly.
so, man, yeah, yeah. But that is incredibly funny.
Yeah, but if they didn't do it, then we don't have a story, so...
Exactly.
I no, guess it's a good thing that Sisko made that somewhat boneheaded command decision. O'Brien no, I mean, didn't step up and say, I think that's not a good idea, Captain Commander.
If I remember the episode correctly, though, I mean, he says that, and so Dax is like, okay, let's download the... And he doesn't say anything to counteract that, so it's like...
Yeah, right.
This is all Dax's fault, really.
It's Dax's fault.
And we'll just say it's Dax's fault. She should know better after 300 lifetimes, right?
Yeah. So maybe that Aerobassador, the arrogant ambassador, as we were discussing on the other side of the orb, had a point when he said maybe she doesn't have the experience to deal with this.
Yeah, those 300 lifetimes just really weren't paying off for her right there.
I guess, you know, she's never encountered a mysterious probe like this in those 300 years.
Who has? So, anyway. Oh my gosh.
Well, why don't we jump into a first topic before we get into the meat of the episode? It's what I call caught in Miles O'Brien's bad romance. With the computer, he's got his typical little argument there. He says it's his arch enemy. But as the story goes on, suddenly the arguing stops, and that's when we know that something strange is afoot with the data that they've brought aboard.
I mean, you know, you would have think he would have recognized the Lady Gaga probe, but apparently not. I do think that it's very interesting. And this is one of the things that I think the writers of Deep Space Nine began to do in the show, which is to try and figure out, you know, what are the differences between the races and the way in which these different species from different planets, you know, what is it that they do that would be completely different compared to human beings? And so having a computer program that was built by Cardassians with their logic and their understanding and their safeguards and all those things that go into it be very different than ours is just an incredibly good idea for the series. And then, you know, of course, to have Miles O'Brien, and we've mentioned it many times, you know, the Atlas of Deep Space Nine, just holding it up on his shoulders, be so frustrated with a machine that doesn't work at peak efficiency is hysterical. And so, I mean, yeah, I was actually just so surprised rewatching the episode how much I was enjoying it and how, and I think it's one of those episodes that I find even more enjoyable having seen the entire series multiple times because of how, it's like they knew who O'Brien was as a character, even though we had seen him barely any on TNG. So he's almost a non-existent character in the sense of like what his character is.
Yeah, because he nailed didn't do it. Much on TNG.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so they've nailed it completely here, what it is. And I know that, of course, again, because of my foreknowledge of what's going to come. And in retrospective, I love it. And I think it's such a funny episode because O'Brien is also the type of character to get easily frustrated with technology. I think the way we all do when it just doesn't work. I mean, how many of us have had technology not work for us and we can't figure it out? And all we want to do is just throw it out the window.
Yep. Well, speaking of that, I've got HomePods all over the house here, and I talk to Siri, the lady in the box, all the time. And sometimes she's helpful and sometimes she's not. And I was reminded of that in this episode when Miles is trying to get the computer to do something. And the computer says, "Procedure is not recommended. Consult Cardassian Operational Guidelines, paragraph 254A, now on screen." Which reminded me of every time I ask for something and Siri tells me, "Here's something that I found on the web. I can show it to you if you open your phone." I'm like, but the whole point is that I'm asking you now because I'm in the kitchen and I'm cooking and I don't have my phone. Why can't you just tell me? Yeah, so that triggered me in this episode, which of course, when they wrote it, it was decades before any of these smart speakers existed, but I kind of love that connected with me this time.
I mean, just crazy to think again that the experience that Miles is having talking to a computer is an experience that we're having more and more often in our own lives. And it's another one of those places where obviously it has taken longer for us to get to that point for us to be able to actually have that type of technology. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's crazy to think like I do similar things all the time. You know, I'm driving in the car and I need to text somebody, or I get a text and it reads it to me and I can respond, you know, mm-hmm. and all of those type of things. So, you know, that is really funny. And I think one of the things that they also kind of predict for where they're going to go with Miles is that he is going to have these type of frustrating experiences where he's going to come up against something and he's not going to know how to solve it, or he's going to get thrown into a situation where he doesn't know how he's there and he's going to have to try and figure his way out of it. And this, I think, in some ways kind of starts the thread we're going to use for the Miles O'Brien story, which is like, what if we put him in prison for, right. You know, like he experiences 30 years in prison, but in 2 days, and like, you know,
yeah.
like all these type of things where, or, you know, he has a Paul Wraith and invading his wife, or, you know, just we're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at him. And this is, we throw an annoying computer program at him this week. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Well, I think it's a good point about Miles and how they knew who that character was, contrasting him with Bashir in this episode, where if you look at where Bashir ends up over the course of the series, very different character. And those two characters are paired with each other through most of the series, and they knew who Miles was. I would say here too, for the most part in season one, they knew who Jadzia Dax was as well. But Julian is someone who really changes greatly over the course of time through the writing. And in this episode, we see him struggling with the situation and finding his footing.
Yeah, this is it was just very interesting to be watching this story and to see it really mirror real life. You know, I think everybody can remember back to being very young and being early in their career, early in their first jobs or whatever, and you're somebody who's kind of wanting to be further along than you are, and to in some ways find ways to skip the experiences that everybody else has had to have. And, you know, Cisco makes it very clear. Look, I had to go through this, and you're going to have to go through this too, because everybody has to go through this. It's a part of the character building of becoming a better officer, right? To deal with situations you don't want to deal with people you don't want to deal with. But at the same time, how you handle those situations, as Cisco reminds Julian, can have a massive impact on your career and how fast it can move. Mm-hmm. And we see that play out here, where Julian, he handles a very difficult situation incredibly well, saves all of these ambassadors' lives as well as his own. And, you know, by the end, they're all calling him Julian, talking and telling him to call them by their first names, and how mm-hmm. great of a job they thought he did to Cisco, and they're putting him in for a commendation. And so, I mean, it's one of those things where I think it's just a really good reminder that anywhere we are in life, like, you know, there are plenty of times where we kind of have to humble ourselves and maybe do some things we don't necessarily want to do, but the way that we do those show our character and can build us into places we want to be. And so I really appreciated this part of the story. And I also just really appreciated that they were taking a character that, you know, many people weren't loving at the beginning of the show and mm-hmm. already giving him growth, already mm-hmm. allowing him to take steps into being a character that we would know and love by the end of the series. And, you know, it's just not something that Star Trek had done really, I think, up to this point. You think of The Next Generation, There aren't any characters in The Next Generation that come off as unlikable. You know, everybody's written to be very likable. And here, you know, you have Julian who's just a little bit too arrogant because he's a little bit too green and mm-hmm. he's got things to learn. And I think it's just one more place where Deep Space Nine takes a step beyond where The Next Generation had kind of laid a foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me in this specific case of the characters on TNG being written to be likable, but I always felt that Riker was modeled to some extent after Kirk in the view that fans oh, sure. have had for years about Kirk being the ladies' man, that aspect of Kirk's personality. And Jonathan Frakes was able to pull that off beautifully, and it works really well for his character. And then when DS9 premiered, I felt that they tried to do the same thing with Julian. So we're going to lift this character one more time, and we're going to put him on DS9, and we're going to have Julian be the ladies' man. And in this case, it didn't work, and the character was not likable because it just didn't fit what Alexander Siddig was able to do with the character. And they did a course correction, and they evolved the character into something that did fit him very well. And the fact that they were able to start doing that early, of course, is really good.
Well, and it's interesting you talk about them trying to, in some ways, pull off a Kirk-style character. And I think one of the big differences here is that, you know, when you see Will Riker or you see mm-hmm. Captain Kirk, those are characters who already have gravitas on screen because they mm-hmm. have a rank and position that allows them to be able to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think that there's a big difference when you have somebody that you introduce on this show specifically who's basically just exited the academy is mm-hmm. being played by somebody who's supposed to be incredibly young. I mean, I'm guessing that the character of Bashir is meant to be no more than 25 years old.
Yeah, right.
You know, mm-hmm. If you think that he just graduated the academy mm-hmm. and even being a doctor, you know, and so maybe 27, mm-hmm. 28. So, yeah, he's meant to be this person who is just incredibly green. And I think that's the thing that makes it so interesting because that's how Alexander Siddig plays the character.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the beauty of that again, and I think what makes it a wonderful thing is that it allows the character to be able to grow. And I think another thing that really helps as well is that it also reminds us all that when we were really young, most of us were really young and dumb. And did yeah, right. a lot of dumb things that we wish we could take back. And, you know, Julian, I think that's probably the thing that a lot of people responded to him with is like,
uh-huh.
it's hard not to see parts of yourself that you don't like in Julian and don't mm-hmm. want to be reminded of. And yet I think that's also what makes him a good character because he helps us show that, yeah, we all had room to grow and still mm-hmm. have room to grow. And his willingness to be able to do that is what I think makes him a good character.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, we've been talking about a lot of TNG elements. Riker, of course, Miles coming over from The Next Generation. I feel like the whole thing about the probe and let's download the data and now we have computer problems on the ship could also very much be a TNG plot. It's a very TNG-style story. And then we have one more element from TNG on here, which is Lwaxana Troi. But what the writers do is they take all of these elements that could have been at home on The Next Generation, they roll them all up together, and then they put a very classic DS9 spin on the writing and give us a story that, I'm not going to say the story couldn't exist on The Next Generation, but when you compare the two shows, mm-hmm. they did what DS9 really did, which is to focus on the characters in the situation instead of the situation itself so much, particularly by trapping Odo and Lwaxana in the turbo lift. And that's where we can introduce Eminem to our discussion today. Would the real Lwaxana please stand up?
You know, I think that there is something wonderful about, and we've talked about this many times, mm-hmm. right? Deep Space Nine takes characters that TNG introduces to, and I think it gives them so much more dimension. And, you know, we've always seen Lwaxana as just this character that's always over the top, so flamboyant. And I think the beauty here is that what we see is that she is compensating for her insecurities. She doesn't want to be seen as normal. She wants to be remembered by people. And the mm-hmm. way to do that is to be outlandish all the time, from her look to the way she speaks. And I think what's beautiful about the story here is that her interest in Odo, which comes off the same as all of her other interests, which is this grand flirtation. And almost, you know, look, you get the sense of like Lwaxana is the type of character who has notches on their bedpost. And that's mm-hmm. kind of what she cares about.
And yet, I felt like Sisko knew about it. It almost felt like Sisko. She's after you now, right? Oh, just like she's after Picard. Like it's news around the fleet. Everybody knows.
Exactly. her latest conquests are part of Starfleet Reddit. You know, there's a whole thread devoted to Lwaxana. I think exactly the case. And the beauty is that this, a movable object just gets in her way.
Mm-hmm.
And
even though she can swim.
Exactly. And the greatness of that is that it makes her realize that what she's probably really, truly longing for is a connection with somebody mm-hmm. who doesn't care about who she is, who doesn't care about her looks, who doesn't care about any of that stuff. Would rather just get to know her, right? And treat her like a person who is willing to get to know beyond all the superfluous stuff mm-hmm. of what's on the outside. And I think it makes for a really beautiful story for that character to also have some growth, right? You know, you don't get the sense that she's changed completely, but you do get the sense that there's something slightly different about her, and she's also then willing to pass that on to Odo in the sense of reciprocating what he needs and, you know, offering him a way to be able to grow, which is, you know, hey, I would love to see you in the future so we can continue basically your tutorial in romance, you know, and there's, again, it's just like, it's so interesting how easily rich the Deep Space Nine writers are able to make these characters with, I would say, you know, incredibly silly stories, you know, like in the end, the story that's on the baseline here is silly.
Yeah, it is silly. And in fact, the way it's played by most of the cast, including the ambassadors, makes it feel kind of over the top in its absurdity, I guess, of what's going on and how everyone's acting. And yet we get this very human, I know the Klingons wouldn't like me to use that word, but this very human story here between these two characters. And what I found especially interesting is that we had already seen Lwaxana five times on The Next Generation, going back to the first season of the series in 1987. Mm-hmm. And she had always been played for comedy. She was a very superficial character. She was Troy's mother who came and gave Picard headaches. And then the DS9 writers take her and they just transform this character in this one episode into a real person who you can identify with, because she says she doesn't want to be ordinary.
Right.
And so you can understand that's why she acts this way. And I think that having these other three ambassadors on the station here really helps to reinforce the real Loaxana that we come to meet in the turbo lift with Odo, because you can see how flamboyant and arrogant and over the top all of them are.
Right.
And it's almost like Loaxana is caught up in this sort of ambassadorial competition of everybody's got to be bigger than life and crazy. And she acts that way. And we've only ever seen her in that context. But underneath, even though she doesn't want to be ordinary, I think she doesn't want to be ordinary, even if she didn't have to keep up with all these other crazy ambassadors. But underneath, she's this kind of vulnerable person who, like you said, wants to be seen by somebody who doesn't care about superficial things. And that just comes pouring out. And I thought that Majel Barrett did an amazing job of portraying that and like making it feel sincere and real. And it you know, really moved me the first time I saw it and every time I've seen it since.
You know, gosh, you said that, and all I could think of that apparently she really likes the Backstreet Boys. You know, because it makes her larger than life. And so she's probably got that on her playlist. Yeah.
And usually she wants it her way. So,
Yes, she does. anyway, I think, you know, we've touched on it, but the way in which this then allows us to be able to dig into the character of Odo as well. Because he is clearly the other side of the story. Someone who is so uncomfortable in his own, you know, regenerated skin. You know, he's only comfortable with the things that he knows and can kind of feel like he can control. And I think that's one of the reasons that he doesn't understand human relationships or care to understand them, is because what he notices and sees from all of his observation is how uncontrollable human relationships are. You know, it is not something that's easily quantifiable. You can't create a formula so you can do it perfectly. It's not as black and it's not black and white like the idea of right and wrong and you know, Odo's understanding of justice. You know, all those things are so much easier for him to understand than the complicated nature of relationships between beings. And so to watch him struggle with that is really good in this episode. But I also think him finally letting his guard down because he doesn't have a choice. It's like, you know, it's interesting to watch him and Bashir's stories mirror one another because they're both forced into a position that they don't want to be in and what comes from it, character growth, right? And so what it reminds us is that going through the plasma fire can refine us and make us better people if we're able to find a way through. And both of these characters do that. And I think that's great. And that's actually one of the reasons that the storyline in this episode, I think, works so well, is because there are a lot, there was specific parallels between the characters. So they're all kind of experiencing similar things, but in slightly different ways. But the lesson of the episode is very clear.
And sometimes not finding your way through can help with that character growth, as in Odo not being able to shapeshift his way out of this. I love the subtly humorous line he has when Loaxana is going on, and she asks him, "What are you looking at?" And he says, nothing. I was just wondering how many volts are in that exposed circuit. He's thinking, like, maybe it would be worth trying to get out. But then he doesn't, and that's where the story really blossoms.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that we find, right? And again, you know, him and Bashir are going through the same thing. They can't get out of these situations. There's nothing they can do about it. So they have to find a way through them. And the beauty of this, too, is that, you know, by stripping away all of these options from Odo, it allows himself to intentionally find a person that he can absolutely trust. You know, and which is so interesting because, you know, beta zoids are known for their free-willing nature when it comes to the way they feel and having everybody know about it because mm-hmm. of how they share their emotions and thoughts with one another. But the beauty here is that Luxana becomes a very safe place for Odo to share something that's incredibly personal to him at this point, not something that he shares with anyone. And, you know, what's fascinating is that Luxana is the first person in Deep Space Nine history to get to experience Odo in his liquid form, mm-hmm. Which is an incredibly interesting, tidbit about the mm-hmm. show. And it's when you put those really unlikely characters together, I think that's where Deep Space Nine really starts to shine.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Well, I think we've run through all the key points of this episode. So what are your final thoughts on this one? And what rating would you give The Forsaken?
You know, it's funny to me because rewatching this episode, I was shocked in some ways how much I loved it. Mm-hmm. I found it to be such a good episode. And part of that is that this is an episode where the plot only services the character growth.
Yeah.
And the character growth for the characters is so interesting and so fun and so well done that it's an episode I was legitimately thinking in my head, I just love this show. I just love this episode. Because this is the thing about Deep Space Nine that I love, which is... Mm-hmm. the character development of the characters, watching them change from one episode to the next. And so I adore this episode. It's actually of season one. I would say it's probably one of my favorites and one that I can and do kind of rewatch more often than not in season one, just because it's kind of one of those episodes you can just pop in it every time. So this may shock people, but I'm going to give this 5 out of 5 removable hairdos.
Aren't those called wigs, Matthew?
Well, I didn't know exactly what Beta Zeds called them, you know.
Okay, So they probably have a more complex term for it, yeah.
Probably.
All right, yeah. I remember what's interesting for me about this episode is that it's also become one of my favorite episodes of season one, but it became one of my favorite episodes after you and I started doing The Orb together, and I rewatched it a number of times, and I don't think we've ever done an episode focused exclusively on The Forsaken, but we've certainly talked about the Luxana and Odo conversation a number of times here on The Orb over the years, and Luxana is a character who... Yes, she has funny moments on The Next Generation, but she was never a character that I was fond of seeing when she would come on.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, okay, but when... In season one of Deep Space Nine, they were bringing different characters on. We had Q, we had Ursula and Bator. Now we've got Luxana. You know, they're bringing Next Generation characters on in this first season as kind of a bridge for viewers, to try to get TNG viewers over to DS9. And when I heard they were bringing Luxana on, I thought, okay, well, what's this going to be? And I think originally, I was a lot younger, obviously, when... because that's how time works, when this first aired, but...
Chris but just also, discovered time!
I discovered time. Einstein would be so happy with me. But... the way I thought about the world, obviously, is different now than it was when I was in university and this episode first aired. And so the more intricate things about their conversation that you and I have talked about today weren't really on my mind back then. And so I kind of dismissed this episode, but over the years, I've come to really appreciate it more and more. And it has become one of my favorites. And the other thing that's very interesting is that this is a bottle show. It was done to save money as they were getting near the end of season one, because obviously they had spent a lot of budget early in the season, especially on Emissary. And I think what you find on Deep Space Nine in particular is that when they decide to do a bottle show, they really come up with some of their very best material because it's so character-driven that you just need to get two characters together. We're going to see that in a few episodes. And you get really good stories. And so whereas a bottle show might sometimes be seen as, hey, we've got to turn another one out this week and not spend a lot of money on some TV series, on here, it actually plays to the strength of the series. Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why I love this episode. So I'm going to give this one, I think, 9 stolen brooches.
Nice.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on The Forsaken. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. You'll see a post on the timeline there for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with fellow listeners and Matthew and me right there. If you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And we'd love to have you there in the Babel Conference. You can also send us email if you like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb. And that will come to us through the wormhole, which really did not impress the Bolian ambassador. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not studying hairstyles, where can people find you?
Well, that does take quite a bit of my time. But when I'm not doing that, you'll find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing Zone2. You also find me here on the network outside of the Star Trek talk in the 602 Club, talking about all those other franchises that we love. So join us there. And you can also find me doing Literary Trek sometimes, Warp 5, The Artificial Tango, and Saddle Up. You'll also find me on the Nerd Party Network with 2 shows. One is called Outpost with Dre Kaufman, talking about Harry Potter, every single chapter. And you'll also find me on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, as we talk about Star Wars. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out where to hide from all of these ambassadors, where can people find you?
I have found a perfect crawl space up in Upper Pylon 3, and they will never find me there, even though they're going to be touring the area. It's a really secret spot. But once I climb out of there, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all those shows with you and in lots of episodes of lots of shows in the back catalog. I'd love to chat with you as well. You can find me on social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. So I'd love to chat with you wherever you are. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network and get involved, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is supporting the network right now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next time when you and I get to possess the bodies of the crew members.
Well, I can't wait for that. And we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.